What's up, homies? Well, if you guys are like me, I love music. But one thing that I love more than just the music is finding out that the person behind the music is an amazing human being. Well, with that said, I can't wait to show you guys Jenna Paulette. Welcome to The Cardigan Cowboy. Before we get started, I just want you to know that it would mean the world to us if you went ahead and rated and reviewed wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you'd like to see these coffee breaks with the video audio version, you can go to our IGTV. So go follow us on Instagram, check us out, tell us what you think. We love your feedback and we appreciate any kind of follow, like, comment, or share. If you're wondering what our coffee breaks are all about, it's simple. We believe that the best compliment to coffee in the morning is a wonderful conversation. Now, you might be thinking, I like to have my coffee alone. Well, when you get that second cup, feel free to join us Instagram Live, where we bring great guests and tell you their story and get you booted up, sent off in the morning in the right direction. Our coffee break with Jenna Paulette was absolutely amazing, so we've taken that recording and we've brought it to you here on our podcast platform. We also want to mention that after that recording happened on Instagram Live, Jenna Paulette got some bad news that her sister, Madison, was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was kind of at a loss for words, so I knew I could rely on my dad to always say the right things. In fact, I remembered whenever my cousin Brandy was diagnosed with cancer, my dad sent her a very sweet text message to lift her spirits. So, Madison, I talked to Dad, and he wrote you a message. I hope you enjoy this, and straight from my dad to you, this is what he had to say. Madison, the toughest part about life is we do not get to pick our draw. And whenever we had to saddle this tough bronc that we call cancer, we knew it was going to be a wild ride. The harder this bronc bucks, the more positive we're going to get. Because we know that when you win this rodeo, it will go down in the history books that you rode the toughest bronc on this earth. Keep your chin tucked and set tall in the saddle, girl, because you're a champion. Madison, this one is for you. Jenna, thank you for taking the time. And hey, we're ready to be backstage. We're ready for you to be playing, and we're going to be there supporting you. Look good, feel good, do good. Here you go, Jenna Paulette. Thank you.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up? How's it going?
Good. How are you? You're good. In Colorado, right?
Yes. Ooh, so fancy. You even threw a little pinky out there.
You know, you gotta just go big. But you wouldn't believe this is from Goodwill.
No way.
Yeah, well, I love teacups. Well, I just love going to Goodwill and finding, like, little treasures, which is so random. But it's, like, the funnest thing in the world to do for me because, like, we haven't always had a lot of money. So I would go and I would go to Goodwill and I'd be like, well, I have $5. I'm gonna find something I love. And so this is one of those finds. This was like 99 cents, but it makes me so happy. So,
well here's to humble beginnings and flea markets.
What you got in that cup you're drinking?
That's right. It's Bravo Mono. I kind of gave him a shout out this morning.
But you did already.
Yeah, well, let's do it again, though. Like, can you tell us a little bit about these guys and how you found them?
Yeah, so Cardiff reached out to me, who owns this company, and he was like, hey, can I send you some coffee? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, some people send stuff and, you know, you think it's so-so or whatever, but I'm kind of in love with this. I'm a big fan of flavored coffees, and, like, this doesn't taste fake, though. That's what I'm, like, it tastes just really, really good. This is the bourbon pecan, and I'm addicted. I'm probably going to be buying this on a weekly basis because I've been going through those K-cups like it's my job. So, yeah, I'm obsessed, and it's kind of refreshing when somebody sends you something and you don't feel, like, obligated to say that you love it. You just actually do. And, yeah, so it's very refreshing.
I feel the same way, and I did a little test. So I'm up in Colorado with family, at my aunt and uncle's. I actually threw this in the coffee pot. Now, we're talking about people that are very Folgers for the last 40 years or a Starbucks type, and usually not flavored. I'm not a flavored type.
Yeah.
This is bomb. And nobody, I will say this, nobody didn't like it. And there's a lot of people that absolutely loved it. So we're getting more of it. We love this. Thank you, Bravo Mono. And you're right. It doesn't have that weird aftertaste of fakeness
that you get from something that is flavored. I mean, they've got regular coffees too, but I've just kind of stuck to this because I've liked it. But yeah, so Bravomano, Cardiff, thank you so much for sending us some coffee. We love it. If y'all want to get any, there's 10% off with Jenna as a code. My name, just type in Jenna. So, yeah, go get y'all some.
Yeah, well, with another promo code of Cardigan Cowboy, they'll add the 10% back. So I would use Jenna. So, is it, say that again?
I said I'll use that code.
That's right. There you go. Well, so where are you? I was going to ask, are you in Nashville?
Yeah, I am in Nashville.
Yeah, I
like it pretty good. I just always tell people, like, I want to pull a George Strait on this place and be back raising cattle in Texas at some point. But I love it because it lets me do what I love to do on a daily basis. You really can't find this much of a concentration of excellent songwriters anywhere else, I think, in the world, because country music is such a storytelling genre, and to do that with finesse, ease, and conversational lyric, I don't think there's anybody that does it better than this town. So I love being here, but hopefully it's not forever, because I just love home. I love where I'm from, and yeah, so I'd love to be back, but I'm happy to be here and so thankful for everything going on in my career right now.
Well, so. It looks like you're absolutely making waves in Nashville, which is cool.
Thank you.
We got to go back home for a sec because I read a little article about you. Did some creeping last night. Oh, yeah. We dove deep. We went deep. Yeah. And one, we found out about a nickname. And then two, we found out about that you might have a little bit of Oklahoma side to you, too.
Yes. You're an Okie. I think your hat even says Okie on it.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. So, yeah. So, were you talking about Jenna Bug?
Yes.
Yeah. My mom's been calling me that forever. And people in town call me JP. Cause Paulette is actually a last name. Usually people are like, oh, is that your middle name? Is that just what you go by? But no, it's my last name. So yeah. So Jenna Bug, JP, those are my biggest nicknames, or if you ask my husband, it's Babe and Honey. So
Babe and Honey, Babe, Honey, and Sweetheart. That's good. Yes.
And then so Thackerville, Oklahoma is actually where our family ranch was. My grandfather actually just passed away, and it just sold in November, which is completely it was totally devastating to me, but because I just never imagined there'd be a day that I didn't have cows on that land myself. But I got our family brand registered in that county, and I'm gonna be back. So yeah,
that's love great.
I can't get rid of me for long. It's right there on the Oklahoma-Texas line, right on the Red River. So you've probably gone up 65 from Dallas, and it's literally exit 5.
My slot machine arm has been there.
Yes, yeah. I watched that place be built. That thing was such an eyesore growing up. We all hated it, but it brought a lot of kind of money to that area and, you know, gave people a lot of jobs that didn't have them. So we're thankful in that way. But yeah, it was awesome growing up in that area. I actually love Oklahoma, even though I'm a University of Texas fan. So, I'm religious about watching those. So yeah, sorry. But also, like, I got a soft spot in my heart for Oklahoma because of the ranch being right there. And I don't know, there's something magical about it. I've got all the pictures that were above my granddad's desk. I'm actually sitting at his desk right now, and it's all the pictures of our cows out in the pasture right next to the road. There's like a pecan grove there, and yeah, it's my favorite place on the face of the earth, and my goal is to get it back one day.
That's so cool. Well, yeah. I also, in that article, read that your grandfather was a phenomenal human being. Can you elaborate on him a little bit and tell us what his name was?
Well, I didn't expect that to make me want to cry, but he's just like, he's the best. I mean, on the way to the ranch every single day, he had this little like plastic carton box that he would keep in his truck bed, and he would stop everywhere on his way to the ranch that he saw litter on either side of the road and just pick it up and take it to a trash can, because he knows, you know, metal gets in a pasture, it's not good for cows, and you know, all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was just the man. He helped everybody that needed it. He was a volunteer firefighter for a long, long, long time in St. Joe, Texas. And that's where my mom was born. And then when he got the ranch, that's when they moved, or they had lived in Gainesville, and he got the ranch, was about 15 minutes from Gainesville, Texas. And anyway, yeah, he's just like goals in life. Sure. You know? Just the way that he treated people and how generous he was. And there was never anybody in need around him, including our family, like any hard times that we went through. I mean, I've driven two of his trucks, and the one that I have now, he gave to me, and it was kind of like his salvation for them telling him that he couldn't drive anymore, actually. So like he was, like everybody was so worried about him. Sorry, this is taking a turn, but we'll just go there because it's funny. So when they told him he couldn't work anymore at the ranch, my uncle started taking him to and from every day, but every now and then he would take his truck out, and he had dementia pretty bad. So he would take it to St. James, where he was born, and go and like clean up his mom's grave. I mean, that's just where his head was all the time. Yeah. And he got in a wreck coming back from there, and nobody knew where he was. They were like, well, we're going to need a doctor to tell him he can't drive anymore, because it won't work if we try, you know, as his kids. So they sat him down. They were like, Pete, can you tell us what animals you can recall? And he was like, cow, calf, bull, stick. Bull, and like all he had in mind, coyote, you know, anything that was on the ranch that he saw on a daily basis. But he just kind of cycled through those things, and they were like, yeah, Pete, we can't let you drive anymore. And anyway, this just shows you who he is. He, instead of selling his truck, he called me up, and I was actually in desperate need of a car at that point. And he was like, hey, Jen, hey, Shug. And I was like, hey, how you doing? And he was like, well, I got a 2010 F-150 sitting in my driveway, and I was wondering if you'd drive it for me. And I was like, you know, like lost it. And yeah. It was really just like the only thing, like giving it to me was one of the only things that could redeem the fact that he had to give it up. Because we just had a really special relationship, and I fell in love with ranching. I wanted to learn everything from him. And
yeah.
I think you have to love it if you want to do that. And it created a special bond in us. And he's the man.
Well, you're now, crying. But I'm not crying. Yeah. You're crying.
Yeah. So really he's just about the most amazing man I've ever known. So.
How cool. And so was he first generation rancher? He went and bought it on his own.
Yeah. And actually the story is cool there too, because he worked in the oil fields. He was a roughneck, and he ended up, he wanted to be a cowboy and had animals his whole life, but his goal was to be a cattleman. And so he started working for a woman, and he had worked with her sons out in the oil fields. And the mom said, hey, and this was Gladney, which our ranch was named after, and he honored her that way until it wasn't ours anymore. But he said, or she said to him, hey, will you come take care of my herd? And I'll give you a heifer a year to start your own herd, and you can start yours that way. And then when she passed away, neither one of her sons wanted to be in the cattle business. And she ended up giving the entire property and all of the cows to him in her will for nothing. I mean, just, and that's why I want to carry on this legacy so bad. Cause I just think that story is too cool for God not to bring full circle, especially if you put a love for it in me, and I got his blood running through my veins. So, so that's the story there. And yeah, so he was a first generation, and then my uncle loved it, and he's actually still doing it over in Japan. He married a woman that he met over there. And then when the ranch sold, he went to Japan to start at their start. course, because it's a very different thing there. But yeah, so he married a woman from Japan, and now he's ranching in Japan. I think it's a very different ballgame, but I don't know.
I think so too.
So yeah, but he's over there, and he taught me everything.
Yeah.
You know, about, you know, being in the grass business and not the cattle business, and taking good care of your land and regenerative farming and all of those things that are really important to running a sustainable operation nowadays. So, I mean, he's the man, and I kind of wish he wasn't so far away, but, but he is right now. So yeah. So my granddad, and then my Uncle Tim, and then me and my little sister.
Fell in love. How cool. I wonder what Uncle Tim is ranching over there.
He's got some Black Angus cows. So yeah, so that's what he's got. And I don't actually know how much, like what the ratio is, like acreage per head there, but it, I mean, he's starting very small because literally the sale just went through on his new place. And yeah, so I don't know all the details, but yeah, but he's excited. Oh, cool. And his sweet wife, Chie, like she just kind of jumped in with both feet, like ready to go on our property when we had cattle running still. And she was keeping track of everything. And, you know, our books were immaculate when she was around.
Well, shout out to them, man. That is such a good story. I had no idea. No idea. And just for you guys listening, we don't really script this out at all. And I'm always just blown away whenever you think you know somebody, in your case through their music or something, and it's totally just such a surprise how deep and wonderful somebody is. So thank you for telling us that. I know it's not easy talking about your grandfather, but I did wonder if I was going to ask you if your husband drives an F-150, because that's one of your most popular songs, but it sounds like you were given the F-150.
Yes.
Everything to do with it?
I was given the F-150. Yeah, and actually the story behind that was I was going to write with one of my buddies, Mark Trussell, and Mark is like an incredible writer and one of my favorite people to write with in town. He wrote that Good Time song that Nico Moon had that just went number one 2 weeks ago. And anyway, I was headed over to write with him, and you don't want to waste a day when you're writing with somebody that you highly respect and that you know you're going to get something great with. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I have no ideas. Like, I'm just dry. Like, I have nothing. And I was freaking out, and I was like, okay, God, like something good, like give me something good. Walked out to my truck, saw my F-150 logo on my door, and was like, hold up, F-150, that could rhyme with a lot of things. And so I just drove over there kind of singing into my voice memos on my phone, and was like, okay, like this could be really cool, and played him kind of the voice memo. I stopped in a few parking lots on my way over there so I wouldn't cry. Truck. And he was like, no, this is really cool. And it took us two sessions to get it to the place where, I mean, it's the finished product. You get a demo after that, which just means like it's an example of what the song can sound like. And I remember I was singing at a wedding in Hawaii when I got the demo back and walking on the beach and got that song. And I was like, yes, this is what I've been missing. I was trying to figure out how to communicate the idea of the fact that a cowgirl can be cool, because I think people look at cowgirls if they don't know anything about us and they're like, well, it's just cheesy Western, like it's not cool. And I'm like, no, it's so much more real than that. And there's so much more variety in the sounds that you can love while still being authentically Western. And it took me a while to figure out how to do that and how to communicate that in Nashville, because they've got a very like cartoony vision of what a cowgirl is. And so, yeah. So anyway, when I got that song back, I was like, this is it. This is how I tell people exactly what I want to sound like, how I want to be perceived by people, and what I think cowgirls can be. So anyway, that kind of put me on the trajectory of being able to write songs like Midnight Cowboy, Wild Like the West, and have them come out sounding like I wanted them to, because I very much want commercial radio success. just because I want to be excellent at what I do. And yeah, and those songs kind of helped me figure out what lane I can occupy within country music, and just found my way.
Yeah, and if we get on the radio, we could maybe afford the other teacup that came with the one you got. There was more.
Yes, yes. And maybe a lot of other things. Maybe the ranch.
That's right. Oh, that would be so cool.
Oh, yeah. I actually wrote a letter to the guy that bought the property. He had known my family for a long time, but I thought that the history of the family that had it before us and my granddad getting it for free, basically, and all of that, I just thought it was really important. So I wrote him a letter and just said, like, hey, this is our history, and I never imagined there'd be a day that this wasn't ours, but I do think you're the perfect person to hold this right now. And I mean, he really is. It's like such a God thing. But anyways, I just said, like, hey, if there's ever a possibility that you want to sell this property, please call me first. And he was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. And so, and I think he's, so we had a sand plant on our property as well as the cattle operation. And so I think he's more interested in keeping the sand plant from what I'm gathering. And so I think he would sell the pasture land, which is what I want anyways. So yeah.
Keep the sand. Keep the pecan trees.
Yes. Yeah.
Did we mention that we have pecan coffee?
Yeah. And it's delicious.
Yeah. Oh man. So do you write your own music, Jenna?
Yeah, I do. Everything that's out, I'm not opposed to cutting outside songs, which is what they call it in Nashville, that you cut an outside song. I'm not opposed to that. In fact, Slow Dancing on the Moon, I didn't write. It was actually written by one of my mentors when I first got to town, whose name is Ashley Corley. And he's just freaking beast. He's like 60 number ones or something like that. And I know how to write a commercial country song because of him. He wrote Slow Dancing on the Moon, and I just fell in love with that song. I just thought it was so pretty, and the melodies were so good. And so yeah, but that's the only song that I've put out that I did not write myself, because I don't know, there are people that are not artists, that don't sing their own songs, that literally are paid to mm-hmm. just write music for a living. Like, why wouldn't you take advantage of those people as an artist, you know? Like, Miranda Lambert didn't write The House That Built Me, and that song kind of solidified her career in everybody's minds, and showed them that she could do something more than Kerosene and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and, you know, some of those songs that really put her on the scene. But The House That Built Me gave her a heart. And there are certain types of songs that you lean towards writing as an artist, and then there are people that are paid to do it on a daily basis who might write a life song better than you. So yeah, so I'm not opposed to cutting outside songs, but I also love writing my own music. And I think there's a magic thing that happens when you record the things that you write, and then you also record things that other people write that you resonate with and that help tell your story.
Well, I love that. And I've heard the analogy used. It's like a car, a race car, right? A song is, and it's up to the driver. Sometimes the driver's very much in the garage building it, and sometimes they're just the right person to drive it.
Yeah.
And I love that because,
yeah,
you know, growing up, I always thought, like, oh my gosh, if you don't write your own music, you're no. But really, there's a relationship there. And like you said, you don't ever see the people behind the scenes that make a living to just write good songs.
Their only job in life. Like, I mean, some of our best friends are some of the best writers in town, and they're just like, that's their job. That's all they do. That's all they want to do. People ask you when you first get to town on the artist side of things, they're like, well, hey, like, could you be fine with not stepping on a stage again? Or would you be okay stepping into a writing room every day of your life? And if you made me choose, I would choose the artist thing, because I love people and I love being on stage, and I love, it's kind of like being in the sorting pen to me. Like, you have to just be in the moment, and you have, it's a reactive situation, and you're prepared for it and all of those things, like, mentally, but you have to be in the moment to do a good job. And I don't know, I love those scenarios, and I can't imagine life where I didn't have that opportunity as an artist to be in the moment and reacting to people and situations and things going good or bad. Like, that's fun to me too. I kind of love it when things go wrong, which is probably some people's like worst fear. But for me, it's like so fun. Yeah.
I love it too. And that's actually channeling that, doing these in the morning. I've had to just channel that, just go with it.
Go with it. Yeah. Whatever you can make happen, like, just go.
Well, so let's jump to the other side. Whenever you have the songwriter, then you have the performance, and then you have the producer. And one thing that I've noticed through listening to your music is it is produced very, very well. Like, the quality there is amazing. And I told you that me and my girlfriend were music snobs, and we absolutely loved your music. Could you talk about your producer and maybe how that process works?
Yes. So right now, I'm working with Brad Hill, who worked with Brothers Osborne and Maren Morris on like the earlier sides of both of their careers. And I love that about him. And then the other guy, he's also my band leader. His name's Lee Holland, and he is like attention to detail guy. And when I walked in and just told them, like, modern cowgirl, it needs to be an overtone of pedal steel, an overtone of country with the basis of having kind of like those pop commercial sensibilities to it. They were like, yeah, sure, we can do that. And then I'm kind of a snob about mixes. So I like for it to sound and feel like big and like it would be high energy to perform, even if it's like a mid-tempo song, like Midnight Cowboy is, it's still got kind of like boomy moments where you're like,
yes.
You know, it's tasty still, and not like bland. So yeah, they just got it. They understood where I wanted to go. They understood the sounds that I wanted. It was very collaborative. I know what I like and what I don't like and the direction that I want to go and what the boundaries are for how to get there. And because I sat down and mapped it out. So when I had an edit or something, they would just go right along with me if I was like, nope, like that feels wrong to me and I don't know exactly what's right yet, but we need to keep exploring. They would just roll with it and get it right. And so they did a fantastic job. I love it. So yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
It's nice to be with people that let you like have a little faith in you, I guess, in a way, and let you really bend and push things in the direction you want to go.
Yeah. And I think that's important for anybody that's like, if you're wanting to be an artist, well, really of any kind, but especially in music, you need to know where you're going because it's a creative process and everybody has their take on what they think you should be. And if you can't tell them who you actually are, people, when they receive your music on the listening end, are going to sense that there's something that doesn't line up with you.
Yeah.
And that's when things don't work, I think, a lot of times. Like, you know, yes, it's a very slow building process for me, at least. But when people listen, it lines up with who I actually am. And so the audience is naturally growing, even if it's a slow thing. And then sometimes you get careers that have a big takeoff and they maybe have one song that goes number one on the radio, but the authenticity is not there. Mm-hmm. Fiction's not there to carry whoever they are into every song that they end up cutting.
Love that. I love what you're saying because all of us have walked into some room and had to deal with other people's visions of what they think we should be.
Yeah.
And like every time I shop at the Buckle, you know, I don't know if you've ever shopped at the Buckle, but you know, I went in for swim and suit. I'm in the changing room, they're throwing jeans over, and before the day's done, I'm wearing an American Fighter shirt. I've never been in a fight in my life. Just totally. I think their vision of me is wrong, but I totally get that.
That's great. Yeah, exactly. Perfect analogy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that that I did notice after creeping on you was you do a little fishing. And you promoted fishing and outdoors quite a bit. Is there a relationship there with, because you mentioned everybody needs to go get their fishing license and I immediately put on an orange vest and then went out into the world. And I didn't know if there was a relationship there with those people. And I want to know, I should have taken notes, but.
No, it's totally fine. Yeah. So that was for Tennessee Wildlife, which like my husband is a massive fly fisherman. Like usually our kitchen table is covered in fly tying materials. Like he loves it. We went to Montana this year and, or last summer. And he was like, yeah, what about ranching in Montana? And then I can fly fish all the time. I was like, no, because I don't want to tack up when it's 32 degrees in July. And so I really admire all of you Montana ranchers that are just like doing it big on a daily basis. And you deal with the cold all. It's just not my thing. So
what's your husband's name real quick?
Tim.
Me and Tim might have a bromance. So
yeah, you probably would. Like you would probably love him.
Because I want Montana.
Yeah. I freaking love Montana in the summer. It's beautiful, but I just don't know if I could deal with it in like January, February.
Yeah. We'll buy you a jacket and space heater. You'll be okay.
Some pocket warmers.
A long extension cord. So you just walk around with the heater.
Just like a bubble boy, but it's heated.
Exactly.
I love it. Okay. So really like he's big into fly fishing. I'll go with him because I like to do it with him, but I grew up in Texas, so it's more catfishing, bass fishing. Yeah. Like, I love that.
Yeah, and then you actually eat it?
Yes, yeah. So it's not, like, just for sports. It's a little more utility, yeah. Which is my world, so that's fine. But this is a side note. So when I was in sixth grade, I won a bass fishing tournament. But I just didn't know that you weren't supposed to use live bait. And I had dug up all my live bait before. And I have a trophy for this. It's hilarious. So I have a trophy eating.
You cheated.
I cheated. I fully cheated. But somewhat unaware. Okay. So there's that. But yeah. But yeah, I won a fishing tournament by cheating by using live bait. Side note. So yeah. So
I just imagine your 12-year-old self holding the trophy and they're prying it out of your hands. Like, we got the evidence. She has worms.
I mean, like, I have like a big old bass. I'm like,
that's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So, but Tim is big fly fisherman. So, Tennessee Wildlife was like, hey, it's almost time for everybody to renew their licenses. Do you mind going up to the Smokies? And I'm like, do we mind? No, we don't. We don't mind. Okay. A day without cell phone service and just out in the middle of nowhere. Yes. So, yeah. So that's what we did. And it was so fun. And he was in hog heaven. So, yeah. Then we drank a couple of rings. Just hung out and fished. It was a little too cold because it was like a week and a half after that really bad winter storm. So the fish were biting, but just not super active. And yeah. But it was fun still.
Yeah.
You
also seem to have partnered with a little name known as Boot Barn. Is this right?
Yeah, that's correct. I freaking love them. So they ended up coming. I got invited to like an Idlewind brunch for country artists. This was in 2019. And they hosted it obviously because it was Idlewind, Miranda Lambert's brand. And so I was like, I don't even know how I got invited to this, but sure, I'll go. So, so I was there and met with some of their social media people, and they were like, hey, do you have any shows this week? It was CMA Fest. And I was like, yeah, y'all can come. Just let me know if y'all want to get in and I'll get y'all in and whatever. So they came to the show and then talked to me afterwards. And they were like, we were really interested in your story. At this point, we still had the ranch in our possession too. And so I just kind of got to talk to them about ranching and country music. And they were like, it's really interesting that you are what you sing about, and we want to tell that story. So in 2019 in September, they were like, hey, will you be in our holiday catalog? Mm-hmm. And we want to tell the story of like you living the life in Nashville versus when you're home and on the ranch, and we'll shoot on the ranch too. So those are like some of my most prized pictures.
They came to the ranch?
They came to the ranch. So yeah, so we did a shoot at the Dive Motel, which if you're ever in Nashville, you need to go. It's really cool. Kind of like vibe. And then, so that was like my living the life in Nashville sort of thing. And then they flew me and my team home and my little sister. And my uncle was actually in Japan at that time, so he didn't get to be in it. And my grandfather was still here, but they had just literally 2 weeks before moved him into a nursing home. So he didn't get to be in it, but Rudy and a couple of the hands that we worked with all the time were in the shoot as well. And it was just really special. And
cool. It's cool that they embraced that.
Yes. I mean, truly one of the greatest honors of my life to get to tell that story while my grandfather was still alive on our property. And I don't know, I love September in Oklahoma and Texas. It's just like starting to get a little bit cooler, but not really. And the grass looks so pretty when it's kind of that like still green, but it's got like a golden tone to it. I don't know. Yeah. It's just absolutely gorgeous. So the pictures and everything just turned out so cool. And the way that they told my story was awesome. And it was right before I went on tour with Mason Ramsey, the Walmart kid, AKA Little
Baby. I love that, dude. He's so cool.
He's the best. He's so awesome. I love him like he's my little brother. It was just the funnest thing ever. So it was kind of like I went from the Boot Barn thing to that, and there's just so much momentum happening in that moment. And Boot Barn also ran like a national radio campaign with me telling my story over like 96.3 and 99.5 Wolf and, you know, all of these awesome stations across the U.S. and in my hometown. And so it was a really special thing. And I love them. I'm so thankful for them. And it's a pleasure to work with them. They're everything that you would hope they would be when they're representing the kind of people that they represent. So yeah, absolute honor. So
shout out to the Boot Barn crew and also the Walmart cowboy. Does he drink coffee?
Probably. He's got a lot of energy. He's amazing. Like, he's so freaking funny. Like, he's a walking meme, which is, I mean, I don't know how he does it. Like, the second time he met me, he was like, "So, are you married?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then he said, "Not for long." Away. I was like, what? Like, who says that? And as a 12-year-old, actually understands what he's saying. Like, I mean, obviously he was joking, but I was like very careful. I was like, I don't want anybody thinking anything is weird here. Like, let's make sure your aunt's around at all times, because I think he did definitely have a crush on me. But that's so, you know, cool. Have like a older cool girl like around, and
yeah,
it's like an, you know, having a crush on a teacher or something like that. But yeah, so anyway, he's precious. He's so funny, and really, like, I just thank God that was my first national tour, because being on the road with somebody that's still very much a child, you get to watch somebody be themselves every night, not care at all what anybody thinks about them messing up, about any of that stuff. And it just reminded me, like, be like a child, just enjoy every second up there. And if you mess up, just like Mason says, he's like, "Well, I forgot the lyrics to my own song," and then he'll just move on and nobody cares, you know. It's just like, he just is who he is, and he's not apologizing for it at all. And I just really feel like it was a blessing to me to get to be on the road with somebody like him. He just enjoys every moment on stage. And it's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I hope to carry that same spirit like into every other touring opportunity from now until I don't get to tour anymore. So.
Well, shout out to Mason. And yeah,
love you, Mace.
I love, you know, that's why I like live music. I actually like the imperfection. I love the stories, and I love the laughs and the,
yep,
the hidden things behind all the songs. And have you ever, this was actually one of my questions, because I have somebody in mind that, but have you ever watched them live, and live just totally transformed the way you thought of them?
Yes.
Would you have somebody like comes to mind whenever you think of that?
Yeah.
I can help you here.
This is so random. Well, I kind of want to know who yours is. So you go and then I'll tell mine.
A guy named Eric Paslay.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
I was in Iowa. Tracy Lawrence was supposed to be playing that night. Tracy, I think, had something happen with his family, we heard, and he wasn't able to show up. And this guy, Eric Paslay, you know, like, and I love Tracy Lawrence, you know. So I was kind of like, yeah. All right. Eric Pasley, if you hear this, man, you put on such a hell of a show for about 4,000 of us there in middle of nowhere, Iowa, and we had so much fun. And then he's one of those people that you didn't realize was the songwriter for so many great songs.
Yeah. And I mean, I'd venture to say he's been extremely successful on the songwriting side of things. And I mean, he's a successful artist too. Very few artists ever see a song go number one of their own that they wrote and performed as an artist. But he has been so successful as a songwriter.
He got moves, man. Dancing, man. I fell in love with the guy, man. And it just made me a fan. His live performance. And there was nothing that he wasn't aiming for perfection. He was just aiming to just give us a great perspective of a great songwriter.
Yes. Well, he's awesome. So I love that. And mine would be another guy who's a fantastic songwriter, who I just like, I don't know, his music's good. I just wouldn't like go to listen to it like I would George Strait or Cody Johnson. Yeah. Lawrence, or you know, the people that I am more like inclined to love. So Chris Jansen is just like, he's an amazing performer. Like, he gets out there with like a harmonica and it's the most high energy thing I've ever watched in my life, and then he has his slow moments, which I think are harder to do on stage when you are performing for people that are mildly intoxicated and want to, you know what I mean? Like, those are the moments, like, you play those in theaters and yeah, they go great if everybody knows the song, but if they don't, it's going to be one of those like throwing tomato sort of situations. Like, maybe they're not actually doing that, but that's kind of the energy that's in the room. And Chris just owns the stage. He's great. So yeah. So he was one of those like somewhat surprising people to me.
Well, shout out to Chris Jansen and Eric Pasley. They were amazing. Eric was, I know. And that kind of leads me into, I always at the end of these deals ask some just random questions. We kind of covered some of them, so my list got pretty short here. But one is, who would be the band that you've enjoyed working with the most, or opening up for, or that they opened up for you? Just on stage with.
I mean, Mason, without a doubt, is one of my favorites, but we kind of covered that. Zach Brown Band was awesome.
You got to work with Zach Brown?
Yeah. Him and Clay Walker were so fun. Like, yeah.
Clay Walker, these are like legends.
Yeah. I mean, it was freaking great. So Zach Brown Band, you just watch them side stage and you're just like, your mouth's open the entire time and you can't get your jaw to come up. Like, it's just, they play for so long. I opened for them actually at a bluegrass festival, which is somewhat random, but I played like the side stage right before them. And then because their band's so big, you have to play a side stage, not like an option. So I did that, and then they played, and their set was ridiculously long. I think it was like an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, something like that, which that's a long set for anybody. And they just owned it. They were incredible. And their musicianship, their ability to just fly by the seat of their pants, Zach's ability to remember lyrics for whatever song they just, excuse my language, but pull out of their ass and their set. Wild. I mean, just incredible. So yeah. So he was amazing. And then Clay Walker was last, like right before the shutdown. And it was so fun. His family's precious. He's got kids that come out on the road and they sit there in their cowboy hats side stage and watch their dad perform his entire set. His crew was so nice to me. And sometimes people just like ignore you if you're an opener. Like, they're like, oh, there'll be a new person next week or whatever. You know, like, they just kind of, because they don't know who's going to take off or who's not going to. And so it's just kind of the attitude usually. Yeah. And Clay, like, his son came over and, like, I just saw this little hand, like, grabbing an apple out of my, hospitality basket that they put. And I was like, oh, hey, how are you? You know, just like shook his hand and was talking to him for a second. And Clay came in. He goes, put that back. And I was like, no, he can have it. Like, there's no way.
Do you mind signing it, Clay? Just sign the apple.
Yes, sign the apple. I'll have it bronzed. It'll be great. he was like, are you Jenna? And I was like, yes, sir, I am. I shook his hand and he was like, I just want to let you know that my crew's your crew. Cause I mean, when you're the opener, you try and keep your crew as small as possible. And so it was like me, I play with Trax and an acoustic player myself. And then, a manager or somebody that's like running my merchandise table or whatever. And so he was like, hey, like anything you need, my crew is your crew. If here's my tour manager's number. And if your girlfriend breaks or anything, like, we'll run and grab you a new one. I got daughters too, and I just wanted to let you know that we got you covered, anything you need. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, just like so cool, because I loved his music forever. And I mean, it was such an honor just to be out with him. But then when they're that good of people and that humble, you just are so thankful for just who they are and the way that they treat you, because they don't have to be like that. So
I think Clay Walker had my first heartbreak song as a child. Yeah, I think he sings "That Isn't My Truck in Her Driveway." Is that
that's actually Red Akins?
Is it? Dang it!
But same era.
Same era. All right. So Clay Walker, I gotta think of a Clay Walker song because I know I loved him as a kid.
Yeah. So and Red is Thomas Rhett's dad.
No way.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think most people know that, but yeah, it's Thomas Rhett's dad.
Well, yeah. Well, he's saying it wasn't his truck in his driveway, and I was singing it's not my bicycle in her driveway.
Oh, my. And,
yeah. They got my family had that on camera. I didn't live that one down for a long time.
Post a small, short video of that.
Yeah. And I apologize, Clay Walker, but I have been on Clay Walker's bus. He wasn't there.
What?
But, we were at a horse show. And yeah. Clay was there, but he was busy. And we got, and I believe his wife or somebody was there. And we said hi to see if he was there.
Yeah.
And he knew a guy that was with us. I was just a kid and was going to get to meet Clay.
So he
was
cool.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Awesome. Yeah.
But I hear he's super, super friendly and so
kind. Yeah, so friendly and great at what he does too, which, you know, that's what you hope for. It's for them to be as good as you hope that they would be, as good as you expect, and then to be just – so humble and kind on top of it, and he is.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm developing the shakes and my coffee's cold, and one last question.
Yes.
If you could go back to your younger self, or if you could talk to somebody younger that wants to do what you're doing, what advice would you give if you could have a sit down with them?
Yes. I would tell them to figure out who they are, because if you don't know who you are, you cannot sing songs that are going to resonate with people. And I would go as far as to say, write it down. Write down who you are, what that means, what that sounds like, what it looks like. And because all of those things are going to help you package something that communicates to people very quickly exactly what your message is. And I just think you cannot survive as an artist, as a musician at all, if you don't have those things wrapped up and decided upon, because there will be a million people in Nashville that want to tell you who they are, who you are, and how they want to make money off of you and how they think they can make money off of you.
Yes.
But it won't be sustainable if it's not accurate to who you actually are as a person. So figure out those things, write them down, figure out what it sounds like, what you do and don't want on your recordings, what instruments you like and don't like, and then do that very thing that you've written down, translate it into music, and do it on purpose over and over and over again. This is kind of a silly analogy, but this is the last thing I'll say, is that like when you think of the brand Charmin, you know what you're going to get from them.
Yeah.
As paper, right? So it seems like a random analogy, but I swear it makes sense. When people think of Jenna Paulette, and they're coming to the Jenna Paulette store on Spotify or Apple Music or Amazon or Google Play or whatever. What do they expect to get from me? Modern, country, Western, right? Like that's what, or hopefully over time, people will come back and over again, whenever they want to experience those sounds and those feelings, that they would come back to my store. people have to know exactly what they're going to get when they get to your store and whatever you're selling, because unfortunately you are a product as an artist. So you have to show them exactly what that is and then do it over and over again so that they can come to expect something and know exactly where to find it in you. So yeah,
oh, cool.
I got my advertising. That's why I'm even talking about Charmin toilet paper. I did all of my projects in college. I was like, I know I want to do country music, so can I just make myself a project in this class? And they were like, yes. And I was like, thank you. So here we are.
Well, when you come to the Cardigan Cowboy, you can expect coffee jitters and not knowing your 90s music.
Oh my God. That song now because of you, so thank you.
That's awesome. No, I'm over here like, well, I guess I'll take a Clay Walker off the list. He's never gonna like me. No,
he would, because you're a real deal cowboy.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I think just like you, I strive to be as authentic and genuine as possible. I did kind of leave that cowboy culture and entered the world, and I realized how beautiful and amazing our culture really is.
Yes.
And I just want to be this middle point where, like, maybe I introduce the world to cowboy, but I wouldn't be mad if I introduce cowboy to the world a little bit.
Yes.
Be that gap, because, like you said, get to know yourself. I think one of the first things is get out there, get out in the world, go see it. I was just talking to my cousin CJ. She's 16 years old.
Yeah.
I was like, man, like, no matter what, don't be scared of life. This life is really good. And we always hear the bad things, but get out there and pave a way and meet people and go places, and that will carve who you are. And
then
when you go out there, you'll realize how amazing our culture is whenever you go out there and see the rest of the world. So,
yeah. I mean, truly, that is it right there. You know, like, it's such a beautiful way of life. It is such an honoring way of life. It honors family and hard work and grit and figuring out how to get something done when you don't have the means to get it done and all of those things. And I don't think you can truly appreciate it until you've stepped away for a second and come back to it. So that's awesome.
I'll let you be. How do you feel? When are your show? Are you going to have any live shows?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Actually, we just sold out Kane's Ballroom in Tulsa.
That's home.
Is that home? I'll get you in. Just text me after this. I'll put
no
you in.
No way.
Yes. Yeah.
When?
April 9th.
I'll try to make that happen.
Yeah. If you can, you're invited.
I've kind of fallen in love with the Texas girl, so it's taking up a lot of my time.
It does. And we got that way with people, so.
I'm telling you.
And, but yeah, I have a show this weekend in Blakely, Georgia, and then a weekend off, and then one in Arkansas, one in Oklahoma, one in Arkansas. And then a couple weeks after that, a couple in Nashville, and then hoping for more and more. But
how do you feel about people that are fans that wear merchandise to the concert?
Love it.
That'll probably be me.
Yep. Yeah, I'll send you a t-shirt and a hat, okay?
Thank you. You're awesome.
Yeah, and after the show, I expect to be wearing Cardigan Cowboy merch.
Oh, for sure. In fact,
Do you actually have merch?
We're working on it.
Great.
Yeah, we're working on it. In fact, we're working on candles. Important stuff here. We love fire.
Candles. Yeah, I love fire as well.
We're working on ball caps. We're working on coffee, and then also cardigans. We have to have a cardigan. In fact, it's life goals to get a cardigan in Boot Barn or something like that. That's the life goals. I mean,
that's the goal. Put it out there. Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, but thank you for being so kind. And this interview is like gone by so fast. You're so easy to talk to, and I think people can feel that. Your music is easy to listen to. Your story is amazing to hear. And it's just so easy, and you're just a breath of fresh air. So thank you for taking the time.
Well, Taos, you're amazing. I'm so thankful for you. I love what you're building and just excited to watch it grow and to be a part of it as it does. So
you're awesome. Jen, I will give you a heads up. Would it be cool if we give you a call right after this? It might be a number, not mine, but we'll make sure the right people are tagged in this post.
Beautiful. Also, you'll download this so I can post it too?
Absolutely. Yep.
Perfect. Okay.
You're awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Well, guys, thank you again for listening to another podcast here at the Cardigan Cowboy. We want to give a big shout out to Jenna. Jenna, thank you for making this happen. And guys, go find her on iTunes, Spotify, and go follow her on Instagram. It's a great way to see what she's up to, what she's all about. And if she's close by, you can go watch her live. We also want to give a big shout out to her sister, Madison. Madison, we got your back. Keep fighting the good fight. And as always, the world is a better place because you're on it. And we always want to tell you that it means the world to us if you subscribe, review, and rate wherever you find your podcast. Also, feel free to join us on Instagram, follow us, hang out with us in the morning, have a cup of coffee as we invite great guests and go Instagram live every weekday morning. So thanks for your support. And as we always say, look good, feel good, do good. Thanks for joining us here at the Cardigan Cowboy. We love you. Cheers.